You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
20 years ago, you would not have found a prop forward who used the phrase KPI in any sort of conversation, unless it was short for some sort of beer. Similarly, you would not have found a prop forward for whom any sort of fitness training was remotely on the horizon. And I know that prop forwards, there's nothing you guys love more than that pre-season fitness, getting in some long running, getting in those really big cardio sessions. That's just that. That's the joy for props, isn't it?
Yeah. I would prefer to wake up at 11 o'clock, first meal of the day, as you said, a lager, and then go from there onwards.
Hooray!
Well, this week on the Dan Nichols Show, my guest is a two-time Rugby World Cup winner, except that is only his part-time job, because as I am discovering this morning, and it's difficult to say no when somebody is a large and slightly intimidated prop forward, when they give you beer for breakfast, this is what you take. Stephen Kitsoff, hello.
How's it, Dan? How's it going?
Look, technically this is my breakfast because we've been recording through the morning and I rushed out of my hotel, skipped a very good Cape Grace breakfast, but I'm now climbing into my first meal of today, and this is your new job, because yes, you're the world's best prop forward, but you're also making beer, and there's something wonderfully right about a prop forward making beer. It just seems like this is how the universe is supposed to be.
No, 100%. It's a big passion project of mine in Malky, and we just absolutely love beer, so got the opportunity to collab with an awesome brewery out in Robertson and just started making beer, and absolutely loved every moment of it.
Now, the Malky in question is Malcolm Marks, who is a very dear friend. You were groomsmen at each other's weddings, weren't you?
Yeah. We were, but I don't think he can remember much about my wedding and vice versa. So it's proper parties.
As it should be for front row forwards. This is something, we'll talk about the minor issue of rugby in due course, but this is something you're obviously having a lot of fun with. And I get very excited when I see people who have a great deal of success in their chosen field, especially a sporting one, but also have this other passion that gives them some balance in life. And here your balance is, as you say, you're a prop forward, you love drinking beer, now you've turned it into a business.
Yeah. It's exactly that. It's a big passion, and like probably one of my favorite beers is like a post rugby beer, post match, and having it in the shower, talking to the mates about how the game went, and just enjoying an ice cold beer. And we took that opportunity and said, like, listen, if this is going to be something you look forward to in the future to work together post rugby, then why not start a beer company and see how it goes.
It's an extraordinary element of rugby, because for 80 minutes you're kicking each other in the head and kneeing each other in the face and really trying to hospitalize each other as much as possible. And an hour later, the guy who in the normal world you would have been accused of attempted homicide towards has now got his arm around you and you're having a beer together. There is no sport that goes from I literally want to kill you to you are my best friend in the whole world in such a short space of time.
Yeah, I think like the amount of blood and sweat and tears that shed onto a rugby pitch for those 80 minutes, as you said, like it's brutal, it's violent, but as soon as that final whistle goes, you become mates, and you went through the same thing, suffered the same injuries or disappointment or happiness, and then you just enjoy a moment together, and you just make the most of it every time you get opportunity.
Let's have one last word about beer before we move on. And I have to say, and I say this with great shame, please do not think any less of me than you already do, which probably isn't possible. This is my first ever bomb scored beer, and I say that mostly because I spend a large degree of my life drinking wine. I do have the occasional beer. I've heard very good things. This is your lager?
It's our lager, yeah.
All right, what should I be expecting as you're the beer connoisseur?
Like it's supposed to be a session beer, so being able to have 10 of them, not too crafty, easy drinking. I mean, for me, it's just all about quantity and quality. So it needs to be a good tasting beer, but you need to have a couple of them in a row.
That's really good. That's my first sip. I have very, very much enjoyed that. I'm also very impressed because as you gave that answer, you drank two beers and I don't think anybody noticed. That's just a really impressive talent you have. So you're having a great deal of fun with this with one of your great mates, and it's a friendship that is sparked by this career that you have got and that you has turned you into a great South African sporting superstar. And I remember back to not having met you, but hearing rumors that there was a training session that the Stormers had had, and this ginger kid had come along and they're doing a weight session, and he's like 15 years old, and they found him in the car park and he was bench pressing buckies and into the actual gym, and there were guys there who were established Springboks who were the size of small villages, and in came this kid who added extra weights on. And is it made up, or is it true that you out bench pressed everybody else and you were still a teenager, not even part of the Stormers?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough in my matric year to get a call up. I was actually busy still writing matric exams, and I had like a biology test left and I think math two or something. But I got an opportunity to go train with the Stormers in the off season. Started benching, and I think the dumbbells back then went up to like 55 kilos. And we were repping it out, myself and Eben, and we were like, no, we need to try and make it a bit heavier. So we went to go get the 5 kg plate, strapped it onto the dumbbells, had a couple of sets with that. But it's so long ago. Like, I mean, rugby's taken its toll on my body. I can't get close to that anymore.
Well, look, neither can I, if it makes you feel any better, which I don't think it will. Go back to that very first stint, because there's a time for every sportsman, sportswoman, no matter how big and famous you eventually become, how much success you get, when you have to start. How intimidating was it walking into that room, looking up, seeing guys who were not just wearing Stormers jerseys, but often wearing Springbok jerseys? You're still a school kid thinking, all right, on one hand, I want to play with these guys. On the other hand, how does the plant reproduction system work again for my biology exam next week?
Exactly. It was, I mean, walking into the gym, you see guys like Andries Becker, Tian Liebenberg, Skogberger, all having a chat, and you've 19 years old, 18 years old at that stage. And you're like, I mean, I wish I can play with them, but like, there's going to be like a long 4 weeks ahead of me trying to survive and then hopefully make it into the next season and get a Super Rugby contract. So it was all like just hopes back then. And like, when I started seeing I can actually compete with them in the gym and fitness wise outside, I mean, that dream became a bit more of reality. So got an opportunity the next year, signed a Super Rugby deal, and played my first couple of games with those legends that I looked up to during my old high school career.
Now, it's one thing to play with them, it's another to play against guys of that caliber. And if there's anything that's going to expose you, it is the front row of a scrum. It is a dark and terrifying place. I had a stint in primary school as a prop forward. It lasted 4 minutes, and it ended with me bursting into tears and demanding to be taken home to my mother. I don't think you would have experienced anything similar, but you would have had, I'm sure, at the very start. You're now down in a scrum and you're up against somebody who's got 10, 20, 30, 40 test matches already under their belt, and the prospect of terrorizing this new young prop forward is oh so exciting. You must have had some pretty tough guys to come up against and to not just physically but mentally steel yourself for competing against.
Yeah, I think probably one of my first like rugby lessons where I got proper schooled was Stormers played a semi-final against Crusaders, and Owen Franks was the tight head prop that started the game. I came off the bench, so he was already about 50 minutes into the game, and I thought, like, he has an opportunity. Like, I mean, this guy's All Black legend, probably one of the best tight heads in the world, but I mean, he's tired by now, and I've got an opportunity to scrum against him. Had a scrum on our own 5 meter line, right in front of the upright. And I would never forget this moment. Like, engaged, felt comfortable for a couple of seconds. Ball came in. I was uncomfortable immediately, and he pushed me up against the post. there was no more going backwards for me at that stage. So, I had learned a hard lesson that day, and I realized, like, it's not just these guys are legends for a reason, and they're the best scrummagers in the world for a reason. Like, these Oaks work hard. I mean, dark arts of scrum, they understand it completely, and I was just a kid of 19 years old trying to survive. But I mean, hard lessons were learned, and took it forward from there and got bigger and bigger games and bigger opportunities and survived.
That front row, I think, is a space that 98% of the population does not understand, and in that 98% I include all French and Australian rugby referees. where it's not just a case, well, here's a big kid, let's stick them in the front row and see if it works. The technical side of being a prop forward, I think, is so much more than anybody comes close to understanding.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, power and your gym strength and the physical attributes you have is one thing, but then like understanding how to use your body in a scrum, or how to survive in like in a low position and not give up because your neck is getting sore or your back is getting sore. Like those small things, like you learn over time. Like me as a kid back then, didn't really understand it. I was just the strongest in the gym. I had leg power, I had back power. Like I could do anything. But as soon as I came up against a guy who truly understood what he was doing, it became a different story. But yeah, those are like those lessons I've learned. Like they stick with me today. Like if I have a tough game or play international game against a big front row who's got great experience, like I need to tap into those moments where it didn't go so well, and I need to learn from them.
I remember listening to a UK podcast about the Wimbledon football team who played against Liverpool in an FA Cup final in the 1980s, led by Vinnie Jones, now better known as an actor. Dave Besant was the goalkeeper, and it was a game they famously won as underdogs. But I only discovered a little earlier this year when I listened to this podcast that the entire Wimbledon team had spent the week in a hotel, and Vinnie Jones, the captain, had given strict orders to the crazy gang, as the team was known. They weren't allowed to shower or brush their teeth for the entire week to make life as uncomfortable as possible. I think this could be a very good tactic in the front row if you're looking to get that edge over your opposition.
Yeah, I think the only problem is you have to, like if Bongi or Malcolm, if my hookah partner doesn't shower for a while, like,
you've got to take it as well.
Yeah, I've got to take it as well. But like, there's been some games and opponents I've scrummed against who it did smell like they haven't brushed their teeth for about a month. So like, it's tough moments where you don't want to put your head in that dark place. But I mean, as soon as you start sweating and game gets a bit chaotic, then it just becomes normal.
Nature of the beast. You made your way into the Stormers. You did very well very early on. Talk me through the process of becoming a Springbok, when you first heard what that was like and what it was like to hear that anthem and then run out onto the field for the first time.
Yeah, it was something you like. I dreamt of as a little young kid and want to play for the Springboks. At 5 years at the Stormers before then, so gained some great experience playing in Super Rugby, playing against some of the best props in New Zealand, Australia. So I had like a tough schooling going all the way to the Springboks. And then 2016 got the opportunity against Ireland in PE. So was there for the whole camp, missed the first two games, just watched from the side. Trevor got injured in that second game and I got an opportunity to play off the bench. So having that first moment and standing watching the anthem and being involved in the anthem, just hearing the crowd, how crazy it goes, that goosebumps you get while you're standing there, and that excitement that builds up is unbelievable. And then I was about 50 minutes in the game sitting on the bench and then ran onto the field. So scrummed against Tark Furlong in my debut, had a good scrum, which was very happy with. Like first moment of the game was a scrum. And ended up winning the game and the tournament, or the series. So that was a special moment for me.
And it kicked off this wonderful run as part of what's become a real legacy team for South African sport, let alone rugby, with a World Cup in 19, another one 4 years after that. And a big part of it is, yes, you've got some incredible rugby players, you being very much amongst that group. But there seems to be a friendship to this team, very close ones such as yourselves and Malcolm, obviously, but just broadly speaking, more than just we're teammates, there really does seem to be a palpable bond that knits you guys together.
Yeah, I think the guys really care about each other. And I mean, it's a very family-friendly environment the Springboks created. So I mean, the guys, all the wives are always at all the tournaments. Kids are always welcome. So it's become like a proper family where guys truly care about each other, spend time outside of rugby together, which just creates that sense of family and true friendship. When you go onto the field, you actually want to give that extra inch for the guy, or that extra mile and just give it your all just because your buddy is playing next to you.
And you needed that to a very large degree in Japan, but you really needed it in France. And I think this is my first chance officially on the record to take to task and very firmly criticize and castigate a member and a senior member of the Springbok squad for the sheer hell and torture that you lot put us through with three consecutive one-point victories. I mean, I'm only 23 and I look well into my 40s. That's how much we aged because of what you put us through in France, Stephen Kitsoff.
Yeah, we made an executive decision in the beginning just to keep it interesting towards the back end. But no, it was stressful. It was a stressful couple of weeks. And we knew France was going to be a very tough game, like, playing the host nation in their backyard. Could have gone either way. And then we thought maybe England would be a bit easier, proved not to be. And then All Blacks always going to be a tough one at the end. But I'm just so happy and blessed that we actually pulled all three of those games through and could bring the World Cup back to South Africa.
It was a very different experience watching Japan to watching France from a spectator point of view. My sense was the end of Japan, I was running around my living room dancing, shouting at 11 o'clock in the morning. Couldn't believe we'd won. It was so exciting. I remember the end later in the day. It was France. I probably had about 7 bottles of wine trying to steel my nerves. And there were people doing the same running around me. I just sat there with such a sense of relief. Thank God we've got through. That was me as a spectator. What was the contrast like for you as a player?
I think it was pretty similar for me as a player. Like, it was off the Japan 2019 in the quarterfinal, was like everyone wrote us off before the time, and all of a sudden we made it all into a semi-final. So it was enjoyment, happiness, had a couple of beers off the game. Off the France, it was relief and, like, thank God we pulled it through, and like, it could have gone either way. So there was no beers or celebration afterwards. We still had 2 big games after that. So it was more of a mental focus point to make sure our bodies are physically ready. Like, there was a no drinking policy after those games, and they were just like,
Did you adhere to it?
I had like 1 beer. I always have to have 1 beer just to calm the nerves, as you said. But it was like intense focus, and the guys were like just prepping for that Monday because we knew we had to play England the following week, which is going to be a tough one. So there was more of a intense focus when it came to France than when it came to Japan.
And I guess when you're going in there as defending champions, and this, I think sometimes we overplay it in South Africa. We think the world hates us a little more than they actually do, but you know that the rest of the world is not going to be distraught if you do lose, and it almost just adds that, right, well, we're going to show them we can do this. We've done it before when they weren't expecting it. Now we've got to make sure that we double up.
No, exactly. It was like going in as defending champions, the target's always on your back, so you, like, any opportunity a team had to either dethrone you or put a blimp in the legacy of the Springboks, they would have grabbed it with both hands. And I'm just so happy, like, with the resilience Rassie and Jock and Sia and the whole team showed. It is like the guys really worked towards a goal of going back to back in the World Cup. So there was a lot of hard work that went into it, but it was just so relieved and happy to be able to pull it through and reach that goal we set out for ourselves in the beginning of the season.
You've also got a team that is managed and run by one of the great characters of modern sport, and somebody who's clearly medically obsessed with forwards. I think if Rassie had his choice, he would start with 15 forwards and have another 8 on the bench, and the backs could do important things like running drinks and carrying water. But when you've got somebody who understands, you know what, they're not just the fat guys at the front, these are the fulcrums, these are the guys who make things happen. You've got a coach who puts so much faith in you. Does that just add that extra notch of, you know what, I want to repay this, I want to make the coach realize that yes, the bomb squad is the way to go, and we're going to deliver?
Yeah, like, he put so much belief in us, and especially when it comes to like set piece dominance and the KPIs of actually winning big test matches is all based around the tight five and the forwards as a pack. So like, it's it's a big burden to carry. Like if you think if your forward's not going to do well, like the back's not going to get on the front foot, then you're not going to see these beautiful tries. But in tough games, if your forwards manage to keep on getting momentum or stopping momentum, like it's all based around that 8 forwards on the field that defends that middle of the pitch with their whole lives. So the amount of work you get through, the performance you put in when it comes to set piece, like the scrums, the mauling, the line out detail and accuracy, like those are all like key points that gets drilled into us like from day one. Like it's when we start our prep for like a World Cup, they bring up a big presentation and they just like, okay, cool, these are the KPIs the forwards need to hit like to make sure we be successful this season. And Rassi just truly believes that the best back of forwards is also African based. It's the guys who's coming through all the ranks. They can always fall into the Springbok pack and put up big performances because they got the right guys and right coaching around them.
20 years ago, you would not have found a prop forward who used the phrase KPI in any sort of conversation, unless it was short for some sort of beer. Similarly, you would not have found a prop forward for whom any sort of fitness training was remotely on the horizon. And I know that prop forwards, there's nothing you guys love more than that pre-season fitness, getting in some long running, getting in those really big cardio sessions. That's just that's the joy for props, isn't it?
Yeah. I would prefer to wake up at 11 o'clock, first meal of the day, as you said, a lager, and then go from there onwards.
But it has changed now because it doesn't matter which member of the team you are. Some might be smaller and actually quicker than others, but your fitness has to be there because the nature of the way rugby is played now, you've got to be all over the field.
100%. The speed of what the game's played at the moment, the amount of work you have to get through in 80 minutes, it's just every year it's getting more and more and the games are getting tougher and quicker. So there's always room for the big boys, but they must understand they have to get through 5Ks of running, being able to get off the floor 20 times. Like those are all things that's drilled into these big boys now that they need to be able to do to actually just try and play an international rugby game.
I do get the feeling, though, I've seen this and I've analysed this quite closely, that occasionally when Rassi in his Waterboy days or some of the others would come on and they always gave you one specific bottle. And I was always pretty certain there was actually a Bomb Squad lager in there and not actually an Energade or similar.
No. I think that's probably from COVID days where it's like still like your bottle's individually numbered. But no, like, you need to get the sugar levels back up. So sometimes it's like a mixture of water and some Energade just to keep the sugar levels up so you don't fade away when the game goes on long.
It's probably just a whispered message. This is Energade, but there's beer waiting for you if we win.
Yeah.
What about the element of diet? Because again, for a prop forward, usually it was a couple of cows a day and you didn't really bother about what you were eating. Does even the great Stephen Kitsoff have to occasionally have a chicken salad and lower yourself to those kinds of meals?
That is. It's nutrition and performance has become such a big part of Springbok rugby as well, where we had a dietitian working full-time with the Springboks, and like we literally based meal plans for individual positions and to make sure that you get the optimum performance on a Saturday. So nutrition became a big part of my life. Like it's
gee, you say that with reluctance.
It is. It's quite difficult being injured at home on my own, not wanting to make the chicken breast salad. It's easier just to order the KFC and
Mr. Delivery calling your name.
Exactly.
Well, look, nothing a couple of buckets of fried chicken won't sort out.
Exactly.
You, of course, do have, I won't use the term handler, that would more be my wife, but you do have a remarkable wife who's been an incredible lieutenant, and it's It's wonderful to see you guys, because whenever you're out and about, you actually, half the time, I don't think you notice the rest of us, because you just tend to be gazing into each other's eyes. Occasionally you break off to pick up a beer. But it's wonderful when I see you and Amy, who are just, there is that, it's a hackneyed term, but there is that soulmates feel that genuinely does come across.
100%. I mean, she's been there from day one, like, been part of my whole rugby career and journey. So, it was such an awesome feeling to have her from day one at the World Cup, and I mean, being like a massive support pillar for me in games or days that were tough, like training wise, or didn't have a good rugby game, and that Monday was absolute hell when it came to meetings and stuff. And she was awesome for me to just bounce my thoughts off her, or just being someone who's there to listen when times got tough. But she's been an absolute amazing pillar in my life, and a lot of my success is absolutely due to her.
Oh, that should guarantee you a nice big hug when you get home. And home has, of course, changed once and then back again. And here we also have to have a look at a slight area of concern, in that you went over to my hometown of Belfast in Northern Ireland. Then you decided you didn't like it. And I can't think why not, because aside from the fact that the sun last shone in 1982, that it rains 412 days a year, and that they haven't had double figures in temperature in living memory, it's a beautiful place to call home. Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Yeah, Belfast was, it was awesome. Like, I truly enjoyed it. The pints of Guinness is unreal.
There is something about Guinness in Ireland that's just not the same as Guinness anywhere else.
Exactly. And the weather was shocking, to be honest, but there was really an awesome group of guys playing at Ulster. The people, they are super friendly. It's, the scenery is beautiful. But Cape Town is home. And I wish I could have maybe stayed in another couple of seasons. But unfortunately, it just didn't work out. And I'm happy to be back with the Stormers.
Well, look, the Cape Town community is very, very happy to have a talisman back. But it is an element, even though it was brief, it is quite a cool part of rugby world today that you're able to have these experiences. And I think, I'd like to hope that most guys go over because, yes, it's a good team and they'd like to play for them, but understand that beyond that, there is a life experience to be had. And whether it is a pint of Guinness or a different culture or different people, there is so much to learn that rugby gives you the opportunity to have a crack at.
Yeah, it does, 100%. I mean, the competitions like the URC and Investec Cup is so global at the moment. So for players to actually experience probably playing in France at one of the cathedrals of rugby, or joining a European-based team for a season or two, it's those experiences you can't buy them. And like, it's awesome that the world of rugby, and it's just become so global where you can just link up with any team and still play and still be recognized as a great player and still be up for selection with the box. It's just become such a global thing, which is awesome. And I think it's awesome for all rugby players in South Africa, because there's only four franchises, recognized franchises, to try and make it professional. If you don't make it here, there's always an opportunity to go to England or France or Japan and try and make it professionally there.
And you've made it consummately professionally, two World Cups and counting, and I say that very deliberately. But what if it hadn't worked out that way? What if you hadn't gone into that gym that day and dazzled everybody with your Thor-like power and scrumming magnificence? What if Stephen Kitsoff wasn't a rugby player? What do you think you might have ended up doing?
Dan, to be honest, like, it's not something I was either thinking of back then, or I was like, had one option and was trying to make it professional in rugby, and luckily I succeeded. But I probably still would have tried to stay involved in sport somehow, either coaching or like become a physio or be involved in some sort of sport-based study. Like, I wasn't sure. Like, it was like rugby was the number one option, and I didn't think any further than that when I was 19 years old.
I've had a number of physiotherapists over the years. They've generally been fairly small, and every single one of them has made me cry. The thought of you as my physiotherapist, I think it probably would have been fatal. Not deliberately, but I think you would have just lost concentration, snapped me in half without realizing, and that would have been the end of me. I'm glad you didn't end up there, because it would have been very painful for me, but also we would have missed you desperately as a rugby player. And I go back to my two and counting. It's become now kind of permanent residence for the William Webb Ellis Trophy here in South Africa, and we like it that way very much indeed. But you're also getting to a point in your career where you'll start to think, right, you know, how much longer do we go? The body takes a huge battering in the position in which you play. Do you start to allow yourself to think about a World Cup in what's now touch over 3 years away?
Yeah, that's... to be always like, it's always been the plan to try and make it to 27. So I'll be 35 years old, which is
young for a prop.
Young for a prop, but that's always been the goal. Like ever since I started playing rugby, like I always set out to be at least 35 before I even think about retiring. But as you said, like the body takes a huge battering, and every year it gets tougher and tougher to wake up and train on a Monday. Like it's the workload is getting more and more, so age is not on my side. But to be honest, like how I feel currently, like I can probably push another 4 or 5 years, and then reassess after that. If it's like slowly tapering down the rugby and ramping up the business focus
and the physiotherapy,
I think that ship has sailed long ago. But yeah, it's trying to find a balance and throw myself at rugby for the next 3.5-4 years, and then see where I am at my life, and then hopefully by then start ramping up the business side outside of rugby, and then tapering down. I'll just see what our life pans out 4 years from now.
And that's where the silver lining to the injury cloud, I think, does kick in. We've seen that with Dion Faree, who had some time out with injury. He's now 61 and still playing for the DHL Stormers for at least the next 25 years. Having some time off allows the body to recover a little and perhaps adds to that longevity. But it also gives you a little bit of an adventure. And you've just been doing exactly that. You've been living it up in Madrid and exploring some different parts of the world and taking some time away from, and as much as I know Madrid, Jude Bellingham, very well known, Stephen Kitsoff, not quite so much. So the chance to just be a tourist, hang out, enjoy life.
Exactly. No, it's these opportunities don't come up where you can just, in the middle of a season, jump on a plane and go visit Madrid for a couple of days. Like these opportunities you don't get while you physically playing every weekend. And but yeah, like I'm just enjoying life at the moment. And yeah, the hard work will probably start next week, where I need to start running again and hopefully be up for selection in the next 5-6 weeks. So yeah, that's pretty much where I'm now at the moment. Like the proper rehab and fitness work will start on Tuesday next week, which is not fun.
Yeah, I always like to think that the fitness training is going to start next week, and I just keep it as next week for as long as I can possibly imagine. And I'm guessing you were doing some research, because you strike me as a very focused sort with your other business. And I'm sure that your time in Madrid, there was plenty of cerveza, which wasn't being drunk because you like beer, but merely because you have a beer business and you needed to research.
Yeah, I had to do some product research and just see what's out there. I don't know if Bomb Squad maybe one day makes it all the way to the Spanish border, but hopefully there's an opportunity for us there.
And that brings us back to where we were at the very start of the show, and this Bomb Squad beer. It's both a really fun project, but also one that's got the potential to become quite a successful business. But it also speaks to this element that has been a definitive part of South African rugby for the last stretch, where the Bomb Squad has turned rugby on its head in how we understand substitutions and the impact that they can have. And I'm guessing that's kind of your philosophy here. We're turning beer a bit on its head and coming in late in the game with something that's both really fun, but also has a fair amount of success.
Yeah, exactly. I think the whole philosophy behind it is as well. It's like what the impact that the Springbok bench had on world rugby and changing the laws and just dominating the last 40 minutes of a game. It's exactly our philosophy with the beer. It's trying to get into a market which is so dominated by the big brands, that hopefully we can turn a couple of heads and hopefully get some more fans and more people and the crowd to start following something new and exciting.
So here's my vision then. I've sketched all this out quite carefully. It is 3 years till the next World Cup. I'm going to fast forward 27 years, and Stephen and Amy Kitsoff are sitting very proudly in the stadium in Oslo, where the Rugby World Cup is being held that year. And you're looking down because Daniel Kitsoff, who's named after your favourite media personality, is leading the Springboks in a World Cup final. And just before the game starts, up on the screens flashes Bomb Squad, the official Rugby World Cup beer. How does that sound for 20, 23 years' time?
It sounds unreal. It sounds unreal. Got some work cut out for me.
Go and get home, get that vision board going, yeah. Sit there with Amy, start drawing it up, make it happen, and then remember my 5% equity when it all comes together for inspiring you along the way. Stephen, thank you for being part of it. It's really cool to share a few beers with you. It's slightly embarrassing in that I've just finished my second one and you've just finished your second six pack, and you're looking none the worse for wear. And for me, the room is swaying slightly, but it's been really cool hanging out with you, and also really cool watching this story. I genuinely remember the rumours of this superhero ginger kid who'd rocked up at a weight session, and it turned out that what sounded a lot like a rumour was actually a wonderful reality. And you've given us so much joy, partly through the beer, but largely through two wonderful World Cups. And yeah, there's another one loading, and I've got no doubt you're going to be part of it.
Thank you very much.
There we go. Stephen Kitsoff, not just playing rugby, look out for Bomb Squad, putting a smile on my face and yours too.
You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.